The womb of stars embraces us. Remnants of their fiery furnaces pulse through their veins. We are the stars that dust off the explosions cast across space. We are of the earth. We breathe and live in the breath of ancient plants and beasts. Their cells nourish the soil. We build our communities on their harvest of gifts. Of fingers, our fingers trace the curves carved in clay and stone by forebears unknown to us. We are a part of the great circle of humanity, gathered around the fire, the hearth, the altar. We gather anew this day to celebrate our common heritage. May we recall in gratitude all that has given us birth.
I, who am the beauty of the green earth and the white moon among the stars and the mysteries of the waters, I call upon your soul to arise and come unto me. For I am the soul of nature that gives life to the universe. From me all things proceed, and unto me they must return. Let my worship be in the heart that rejoices, for behold, all acts of love and pleasure are my rituals. Let there be beauty and strength, power and compassion, honor and humility, mirth and reverence within you. And you who seek to know me, know that your seeking and yearning will avail you not, unless you know the mystery. For if that which you seek you find not within yourself, you will never find it without. For behold, I have been with you from the beginning, and I am that which is attained at the end of desire. So mote it be.
Stories of Creation, Australian Aborigine. When the earth was newborn, it was plain and without any future or life. Waking time and sleeping time were the same. There were only hollows on the surface of the earth, which one day would become water holes. Around the water holes were the ingredients of life. Underneath the crust of the earth were the stars and the sky, the sun and the moon, as well as all forms of life, all sleeping. The tiniest detail of life was present, yet dormant. The head feathers of a cockatoo, the thump of a kangaroo's tail, the gleam of an insect's wing. A time came when time itself split apart, and sleeping time separated from waking time. This moment was called the dream time. At this moment, everything started to burst into life. The sun rose through the surface of the earth and shone warm rays onto the hollows which became water holes. Under each water hole lay an ancestor, an ancient man or woman who had been asleep throughout the ages. The sun filled the bodies of each ancestor with light and life, and the ancestors began to give birth to children. Their children were all the living things of the world, from the tiniest grub wriggling on a eucalyptus leaf to the broadest winged eagle soaring in the blue sky. Rising from the waterhole, the ancestors stood up with mud falling from their bodies. As the mud slipped away, the sun opened their eyelids and they saw the creatures that they had made from their own bodies. Each ancestor gazed at his creation in pride and wonderment. Each ancestor sang out with joy, "I am." One ancestor sang, "I am a kangaroo." Another sang out, "I am a cockatoo." The next sang, "I am a honey ant." And the next sang, "I am a lizard." As they sang, naming their own creations, they began to walk. Their footsteps and their music became one, calling all living things into being and weaving them into life with song. The ancestors sang their way around the world. They sang to the rivers, to the valleys, and the sand into dunes, the trees into leaf, and the mountains to rise above the plain. As they walked, they left a trail of music. Then they were exhausted. They had shown all living things how to live, and they returned to the earth itself to sleep. And in honor of their ancestors, the Aborigines still go on walkabout, retracing the steps and singing the songs that tell the story of life.
A Hindu myth. Before time began, there was no heaven, no earth, and no space between. A vast dark ocean washed upon the shores of nothingness and licked the edges of night. A giant cobra floated on the waters. Asleep within its endless coils lay the Lord Vishnu. He was watched over by the mighty serpent. Everything was so peaceful and silent that Vishnu slept undisturbed by dreams or motion. From the depths, a humming sound began to tremble. Om. It grew and spread, filling the emptiness and throbbing with energy. The night had ended. Vishnu awoke. As the dawn began to break, from Vishnu's navel grew a magnificent lotus flower. In the middle of the blossom sat Vishnu's servant, Brahma. He awaited the Lord's command. Vishnu spoke to his servant, "It is time to begin." Brahma bowed. Vishnu commanded, "Create the world." A wind swept up the waters. Vishnu and the serpent vanished. Brahma remained in the lotus flower, floating and tossing on the sea. He lifted up his arms and calmed the wind and the ocean. Then Brahma split the lotus flower into three parts. He stretched one part into the heavens. He made another part into the earth. With the third part of the flower, he created the skies. The earth was bare. Brahma set to work. He created grass, flowers, trees, and plants of all kinds. To these he gave feelings. Next, he created the animals and the insects to live on the land. He made birds to fly in the air and many fish to swim in the sea. To all these creatures, he gave the sense of touch and smell. He also gave them power to see, hear, and move. The world was soon bristling with life, and the air was filled with the sounds of Brahma's creation.
This is a Native American story. In the beginning, there was no earth to live on, but up above in the great blue, there was a woman who dreamed dreams. One night, she dreamt about a tree covered with white blossoms, a tree that brightened up the sky when its flowers opened, but that brought terrible darkness when they closed again. The dream frightened her, so she went and told it to the wise men who lived with her in their village in the sky. "Pull up this tree," she begged them, but they did not understand. All they did was dig around its roots to make space for more light. But the tree fell through the hole they had made and disappeared. After that, there was no light at all, only darkness. The old man grew frightened of the woman and her dreams. It was her fault that light had disappeared forever. So they dragged her to the hole and pushed her through as well. Down, down she fell, down towards the great emptiness. There was nothing below her but a heaving waste of water. She would surely have been smashed to pieces, this strange dreaming woman from the great blue, had not a fishhawk come to her aid. His feathers made a pillow for her, and she drifted gently above the waves. But the fishhawk could not keep her up all on his own. He needed help. So he called out to the creatures of the deep. "We must find some firm ground for this poor woman to rest on," he said anxiously. But there was no ground, only the swirling, endless waters. A hell diver went down, down to the bottom of the sea, and brought back a little bit of mud in his beak. He found a turtle, smeared mud onto its back, and dived down again for more. Then the ducks joined in. They loved getting muddy, and they too brought beaks full of the ocean floor and spread it all over the turtle's shell. The beavers helped. They were great builders, and they worked away, making the shell bigger and bigger. Everybody was very busy now, and everybody was excited. This world they were making seemed to be growing enormous. The birds and the animals rushed about building countries and continents until, in the end, they'd made the whole round world, while all the time the Sky Woman was safely sitting on the turtle's back. And the turtle holds up the earth to this very day.
This is a story from ancient Greece. In the days when gods and goddesses walked on the earth, the three most powerful gods were brothers. Zeus was ruler of the sky, Poseidon was god of the sea, and Hades was lord of the underworld. The underworld was a terrible place, a place without light, where the spirits of the dead went. Having entered the underworld, and having eaten there, no one was allowed to re-enter the world of the living. A beautiful girl lived on the earth, and her name was Persephone. One day, Hades visited Earth and rode past Persephone while she was gathering flowers in a field. He was dazzled by her beauty. He wanted her. And being one of the three most powerful gods, he kidnapped her and drove off in his chariot. Persephone was terrified. She was pinned to the floor of Hades' chariot while he drove faster and faster, down and down, into the darkness of the underworld. In the black halls of Hades, Persephone crouched and cried, refusing all food, refusing to speak to the god who had snatched her away. Days passed. Persephone's hunger grew. At last, she could resist no longer. She ate some pomegranate seeds, and having eaten, she could not return to the world above. Meanwhile, her mother, the goddess Demeter, grew distracted. She knew what had happened, but she could do nothing. She raged all the more because she was powerless against Hades. She went to Zeus, the king of the gods, and begged him to bring about Persephone's return. Zeus could not bear Demeter's crying. Her tears were destroying the harvest. He had to do something. Unfortunately, he was too late to stop Persephone eating the pomegranate seeds. The rules of the underworld had to be obeyed. Yet, Zeus being Zeus, the rules could be stretched a little. He sent Hermes, the messenger of the gods, to strike a deal with Hades. The deal was this: Persephone would marry Hades and remain queen of the underworld, living there half the year. In the spring, she could return to Earth and live there in the warm, bright light of the summer. And this is what happened. While Persephone lives in the underworld, the days are short and dark and cold. But with her return to Earth in the spring, the flowers start to bloom, the leaves to bud, and the birds to sing in the sky.
Take a quick second to think about why you got out of your soft, comfortable bed, got dressed, and drove here this morning. Was it habit, looking for something to do, socialization, curiosity about those pagans, or maybe you were looking for a message? All of these could be the reason. For the most part, we all want to learn and experience something new. The human animal has need to make sense of things, to know the facts, the big secret, the lowdown. We need to be validated that we are in possession of the truth. Students need to get their test papers back from the corrections and feedback. The new mothers call their pediatricians to make sure their infant is growing and behaving the way it's supposed to, and that their little one is normal. Countless people also flock to therapists to have their feelings validated and to process conflicting messages and signals they receive every day. There is no difference with our spirituality. Most people who commit time to study a religious or spiritual path want to know that they are seeking the truth. Some become so convinced of their superior knowledge, and they even turn angry and even violent towards those who do not believe their truth. Countless crimes have been committed and wars have begun because of this determination. I don't believe anyone here would think that that is acceptable behavior. So what's the answer? Do we banish religion, extinguish spirituality? Some people might believe that's the solution. Do we really need a connection to a creator? There are a couple of lines from a song that I feel make a lot of sense. How the hell can a person go to work in the morning, come home in the evening, and have nothing to say? To believe in just living, just the hard way to go. Just give me one thing that I can hold on to. To understand why we are on this planet, what our purpose is, and that our life makes some kind of sense, is an integral part of being healthy, both physically and mentally. When we have sense of purpose, we feel part of the larger society. The way we make sense of our purpose is our own personal truth. A child needs to know that when he or she falls down and hurts themselves, that there is someone who will make them feel better. They need to know they will be protected from the bad things in the world. They are accepted unconditionally for who they are. For most children, that is their mother or their father. Many religious and spiritual paths equate the creator to a father or mother figure, and in some cases, both. The creation stories that we heard earlier at least have one thing in common. Creation came from love. The Aborigine ancestors were full of joy for their creation. Vishnu was honored to create for his teacher, Brahma. The animals in the Native American story created to care for Dreaming Woman. And finally, Demeter showed the love of a mother for her daughter. I don't believe I have ever met one person in my 46-year life that didn't want to be loved. Statistics show that children that grow up in a house where they are rarely picked up as infants, never hugged, or shown affection and acceptance as they grow, will probably grow up to have psychological problems and will not bond to other human beings and may even become psychopathic. Obviously, these are extremes. Most commonly, some teens and even adults turn to gangs, exhibit addictive behaviors of many types, and even accept abusive relationships to acquire what they perceive as acceptance or love. While going to church every Sunday, temple on Saturday, or Sabbat rituals through the wheel of the year is not going to keep everyone happy and trouble-free, it can help. By being with a group of people that you can connect with, you find support to deal with the daily issues that are guaranteed to affect you physically and emotionally. It helps us put ourselves into perspective as a member of a larger consciousness. The anger and disillusionment among some people comes from the dogma of a religion. I believe that spirituality is not religion. Religion divides people. Belief in something unites them. Joseph Campbell said in his book, Pathways to Bliss, make your God transparent to the transcendent, and it doesn't matter what his name is. If the creator that is a part of your personal truth is all-encompassing, and reflects all aspects of your life. The Creator becomes the core of your daily existence. This connection needs to be and must be a personal connection, not rhetoric heard or read and regurgitated on command. Thinking with the mind, and more importantly, with the heart, allows us to understand what makes sense for us. We can learn catchphrases and slogans our entire life. We can memorize passages with zeal. But if no thought or feeling is put into it, it doesn't guide us, and we miss the message altogether. We can live our faith and beliefs, whatever they may be, and use them to help us make decisions and guide us through tough times. The voice of our personal Creator becomes that little voice inside telling us to stand up for ourselves when we are being disrespected, to rejoice in the feeling of the sunshine on our face when we're walking quietly, makes us stop before we say something we realize might hurt someone, and to yell out in joy when a friend announces they're having a baby. I equated the concept of a Creator as a mother and or father figure. For most people, these are positive feelings of protection and acceptance. The feeling of a warm embrace for a job well done, cozy, tingling sensation of knowing all is well, and that mom and dad are down the hall if the boogeyman shows up. For most children, this is instinctive. But now here's the big difference. Our parents were there from the very beginning, and the love and protection was pretty much guaranteed. We need to work at communicating with our personal spiritual Creator. We need to have conversations with him, her, or them. Guidance will come when we ask. We hear that little voice when we open up that inner ear. We feel that warmth embrace when we reach for it. I keep using the word personal, and it may be starting to sound redundant, but that is a key part of this whole thing. What works for one person may not work for another. This connection can come in many, many, many different ways. For some, kneeling and praying is an enlightening and powerful experience. For others, riding their bike and hearing the birds singing manifest a peaceful bond with their higher power. There are as many ways to establish that connection to the personal Creator as there are people. Artists speak of a euphoria that happens when they become inspired to paint or sculpt. Writers have felt as if they are being guided to put the words down on paper. These people speak of opening themselves up to the creative energy. I suggest that is how we establish a connection with our higher power or personal Creator. Sit down every morning and write a letter to God or Goddess. Go for a walk by yourself at lunchtime and say, "Hey, need some help here." Okay? Paint a picture as an outlet for the end of the hectic week. Bang on that drum and dance to the moon. Do something. Find an avenue of communication that works for you. Volunteer at a food shelter. Organize discussion groups. Dance with your children. Anything that you are inspired to do is only going to give you a sense of fulfillment and purpose. And that, in turn, will give you the sense of connection with the eternal mystery of it all. I quote Joseph Campbell again. This quote is from The Inner Reaches of Outer Space. "One cannot predict the next mythology any more than one can predict tonight's dream. For a mythology is not an ideology and is not something projected from the brain, but something experienced from the heart. Even scientist Albert Einstein came to an understanding of the need for this mythology in our life. My religion, and I quote, "My religion consists of a humble admiration of the unlimited superior spirit who reveals himself in the slight details we are able to perceive with our frail and feeble minds. That deeply emotional conviction in the presence of a superior reasoning power which is revealed in the incomprehensible universe forms my idea of God." We can have strong and powerful beliefs and still allow others to have their own personal truth. We need not take that step to believing there is only one truth. The mystery of this universe is that there can be more than one truth. That can be hard for many people to accept. The world can seem so black and white. Yet even science has had its truths proven to be questionable. Many new species have been found, and once thought extinct species have been rediscovered. It does not matter what our beliefs about a personal creator are or where they came from. What matters is that our heart feels it, our mind understands it, and our soul is nurtured by these beliefs. Getting together with other people who share similar beliefs is an intricate part of the outward expression of our spirituality. Combining energies can get a lot of good work done. Support systems are established for the common good of all. But this cannot be accomplished if you have not achieved or established that first critical step of making a personal connection to your creator.